public-private partnership mean a whole lot to me. And I think that that is the way we're going to grow as a country. Long ago, it was the government did everything for the government. But bureaucracy and projects can get slowed down because there's a lot of red tape in government. But if we share that risk and if we share those project designs, we can get innovation out of the private sector and we can get a lot more things done faster.
Hello, everyone. This is Barbara Humpton, CEO of Siemens USA, and you're listening to The Optimistic Outlook. So let me ask you, when you hear the phrase tech city, which cities come to mind? San Francisco? Sure. New York, Boston, maybe Austin, Texas? Well, what about Atlanta, Georgia? Hey, and by the way, what does it really mean to be a tech city in 2024? One concept we talk about a lot on this podcast is that what we call digital transformation, and with it, the technology industry, has been evolving. In the last decade, we saw digital technologies transform our personal lives and the consumer world. Now the next wave is things. It's industry, infrastructure, transportation, sectors that form the backbone of the American economy. Traditional industries are now joining forces with the tech sector as our economy and society become increasingly digital and connected. Today, we have with us Atlanta Mayor Andre Dickens. To guide us through these trends, he'll share with us his vision for turning Atlanta into a top five tech hub. We're also going to learn about Mayor Dickens' career journey. From his start as a chemical engineer to being a successful entrepreneur to his entry into public service. Mayor Dickens is an Atlanta native, and I'll share that Siemens is a proud contributor to Atlanta's tech economy. With employees statewide representing several of our businesses, we're supporting rail transportation, electric mobility, grid infrastructure, manufacturing, buildings, and much, much more. All right, take a listen. Mayor Dickens, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So, Mayor, we're here to talk about your vision for making Atlanta a top five tech hub. But I thought it'd be fun to start with a few questions to help our listeners get a sense of where your passion for this comes from. Let's take a look behind the scenes at your schedule, serving the people of Atlanta. I've heard you describe the job as being part prince, part president. What's been a memorable prince moment recently? And tell us about a gratifying president moment.
Yeah, it's part prince and part president, because part prince is people want you to be there for their every, you know, occasion. A lot of birthday celebrations, grand openings, 10-year anniversaries, 30-year anniversaries, all kinds of homecomings for colleges, et cetera, church, pastor's anniversaries, et cetera. I mean, every day someone wants the mayor to just be there, show up to say, hear ye, this is a great thing that this person has done or a great place to be. I can tell you, it always, the best princely moment is the 100th birthday. When someone reaches 100 years of age, that is such a remarkable time to look back over their life. I like to go to those celebrations and say thank you for living a long, supportive life into our city, and more days to come for this person.
What about a president moment?
Okay. So a president moment is just the critical decisions that you have to make around making sure that people are safe, making sure they have infrastructure clean, drinking water, the clean, safe streets. So some of the prince moments are fun, but the president's moments are often those critical decision moments about giving employee raises or moments around building an affordable housing development. I'll tell you one real president moment was the recent building of the Melody, which is a 40-unit homeless shelter that is 40 shipping containers that each individual shipping container has been converted into a micro hotel where they all have a bed, they have a bathroom, a shower, they have a little kitchenette, refrigerator, a stove. And these 40 individuals, we built it within 4 months because I said, we want to get these people out of the cold. And so being able to just say in 4 months' time to get people from being out in the cold to being in their own room with their own key, with all kinds of wraparound services around them, that was a real presidential moment.
That's fantastic. And I think both you and I have had the opportunity to enjoy being connectors. Yes, sometimes when you're the prince, you are showing up at ceremonial activities, but often you're making things happen. And so at the beginning of our careers, however, we were both more in technical jobs. You began in the chemical engineering field. I was in software development. Let's revisit this. What were your first jobs like, and how do you draw on that technical background today in your public service?
Yeah, so I interned in co-op my entire time through college as an intern in chemical engineering. So I worked for companies at chemical factories, manufacturing plants, where we made plastics for the most part. And so that career, that led to my career as a chemical engineer in a chemical plant making plastics. And that was very good information and structure for me. It helped me understand how to solve problems, how to be able to isolate what variables we have and to do trials and testings, but to be prepared because tests and trials can be expensive. So you got to know your stuff. You got to study and be prepared. The other thing was it taught me to listen to folks that had experience. There were engineers that, and operators. Operators are folks that may not have a chemical engineering degree, but they know that facility better than anyone. So you go to those folks and say, hey, Bill, hey, Jane, hey, Todd, how does this work? And why? What do you think are some solutions? And then I'll go put the research behind it and then go implement it. And lo and behold, they were right. These folks know the solutions, but once we put it in place, the company works better, the outcomes are good. And so I use that today as the mayor of this city, being able to draw upon experiences, being able to listen to people to say, let's solve this problem together. Help me understand. And then I go out there and find best cases and practical solutions, put them in place, and the city is better for it, just like the companies were better.
Yeah, tapping into that expertise. But I want to build this bridge because starting your career in sales in this technical field, you went into being an entrepreneur. Did your aspirations for public service start then, or did you develop that ambition along the way?
So it's an interesting journey. I started off at 16 years old wanting to be mayor of Atlanta. I used to talk about it when I was in high school. I want to be mayor of Atlanta one day. But nobody in my family had ever gone to college. Neither had anybody in my family ever been in engineering. So I went on and did the chemical engineering degree and worked. And I moved into chemical sales because I had a good grasp of the knowledge of the products. People in the community that I was working in around the plant said I was very charismatic and able to talk to folks. So they said, you should go into sales. So I went into sales and I took to it like a fish to water. It was great. I was talking technical terms to technical people, but I was selling and adding value for the companies that I worked for. And I became salesman of the year and made a tremendous amount of profit and stability for the company that I worked for. And what was useful at that time was they would do 360-degree interviews of my clients and of me. That was how they did a part of the evaluation. Why do you buy from us? Why do you buy from this company? Why do you buy from Andre Dickens, your salesperson? And they said, because he knows the product and he's honest. So knowledge and honesty, ethics and communication were all wrapped up into that. And that's where we are today with me being mayor, learning that honesty and capability, they go hand in hand so that you build that trust.
I mean, we've learned this from the Edelman Trust Barometer. The two critical factors for building trust are first competence, you know, knowing your stuff, and then integrity, being able to act in accordance with values. That builds trust, and that's a key aspect of city leadership. There's another aspect to this too, which is cities and partnership with private businesses. And how does that private sector experience inform your ideas about how cities and businesses can work together?
Yeah, I believe in the ability and power of public-private partnerships. Because I worked so long in the private sector, I have a tremendous amount of value for the business cases, the business decisions, how CEOs like yourself are able to deliver value to your bottom line and to do so with, you know, in competitive environments. You have to be good at your job. You have to be competitive. And so for me, I've created a lot of movement and put in opportunity in our city and made a lot of strides by leaning on public-private partnerships. I am the chairman of the Public-Private Partnership Task Force at the U.S. Conference of Mayors. This is the first task force ever dedicated to this. And so I'm the inaugural chairman, been that way for 2 years. And that's because the U.S. Conference of Mayors, of all the mayors across the country, they said, this guy here understands business. And I know the value of, you know, how working together in various groups to be able to say, well, we can get this product done, this project done better. We can get it done faster. We can reduce risks on our government by, you know, shifting some risk to be shared between the private sector and the public sector. And we've done a lot of projects that way. And so the city of Atlanta is moving at light speed because of our working relationship with the business community. So public-private partnerships mean a whole lot to me. And I think that that is the way we're going to grow as a country. Long ago, it was the government did everything for the government, but bureaucracy and projects can get slowed down because there's a lot of red tape in government. But if we share that risk and if we share those project designs, we can get innovation out of the private sector and we can get a lot more things done faster. We're doing that here, and it's it's been going well. And I share our successes with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which is a bipartisan group of mayors across the country. And I think they're using these skills as well.
Yeah, as a company that does a lot of work with cities all across the country, we too buy into this idea. I think what I heard you describe is a win-win, which is actually when we work together, if we share the art of the possible, what the private sector can bring, with the needs of the public sector, if we can then examine budgets and make sure we come in on time, within budget, we can actually get that kind of win-win for our communities.
Yeah, I like how you put that, a win-win. We don't want relationships to be I win and you lose. I definitely don't want a relationship where I lose and you win. Win-win for all parties involved is great. A win-win-win, if you will. It is important for us to always seek that. And that's something that public-private partnerships should be designed to be as win-win for everyone involved so that the business folks can get their business outcomes, the public officials, the government can get what it's looking for out of this project so that the public benefits. It brings resources to our communities that allows us to benefit and serve our communities even better. And I think that that is the biggest win, is that the people on the other side of this, the community residents, people that are starting small businesses, the young children, whoever benefits, they can see it and they can feel it. And you're right, it's a win-win. And these partnerships become the norm. The win-win should become a norm in order for our communities to flourish.
I love it. I like to point out to our team that there's only two outcomes, win-win or lose-lose. So you're really underscoring that for me. Thank you so much. Hey, listen, I also want to take a moment now and think about this term tech city. Some people will hear this and they'll think immediately of Silicon Valley. What I'd love to do is to move from the concept of just IT jobs and opportunities and bring in the concept of the new tech, the tech that you and I know, that even in the chemical industry, right, everything is becoming digital. So the idea of a tech city can refer to any number of technologies. Tell us about your vision.
Yeah, so Metro Atlanta is currently identified as the tech capital of the South. You have Silicon Valley out west, you have some other players, but, you know, people know Atlanta to have a rich tech talent. We have great institutions of higher learning. Georgia Tech produces more engineers than anybody in the United States. We have a great computer science program producing a bunch of, you know, software developers and programmers. And so we have the Morehouse Spelman, the AUC, Emory. We have so much college talent right here that companies are finding us attractive for jobs. And then all of this development talent is happening because we have folks doing startups with great ideas. We're a lower cost city. than some of our competitors on the coasts, whether that's the Northeast or the West. We are the capital of the South. And now, you know, as I said before, we want to be a top five technology ecosystem where jobs, where funders, venture capitalists, those that are putting resources behind all of our founders are all together conversing with one another, making things. We want our founders to be successful. We have a great startup community. They might have worked for a company and now they're out here working on their own to start their business, to get their innovative idea developed, to get it supported and funded. And we are doing a lot of that. And in my administration, we see value in the technology that's coming to our city. Some of it generated by our city. Some of it is companies putting innovation centers here or HQ2s here or regional hubs here. We have so many companies that are choosing Atlanta to land some of their employees and to do some of their innovation. We're really seeing a lot of attention and reaping the benefits of that. So we want to keep rolling. We want to keep going to a point to where we are an ecosystem of jobs where folks that are growing up in Atlanta can really aspire to get these technology jobs, because we understand these tech jobs pay great money. People can definitely have a really substantial life if they just get on the path with the technology. So a lot of things that we're doing is training young folks and training others to be able to gain, you know, certifications or gain degrees to be able to get a good tech job. You know, I created the city's very first Office of Technology and Innovation, and I have a new senior advisor, Donnie Beamer, who is the first ever to hold that position. He's the senior advisor on technology, and he's hit the ground running. He's been at it for a year, and the results are in that we are doing a great thing moving the city forward in terms of technology. So a lot is being done. A lot more is left to be done. But we're moving to be a tech city, a city of innovation. And as for companies and small businesses in-house, we're also doing a lot in the technology front as well.
It's so exciting to hear. And I love the way you're describing Atlanta and you're focused on the whole tech ecosystem. Mayor Dickens, I want to just try a theory on you, because there's something I've been thinking about. In the olden days, mayors or governors would come to a company like ours and say, won't you move your headquarters or move a major manufacturing site to our town? And what we thought about was the business and the people all come together. Well, we're now living in an era where as long as you have power and comms, you can work anywhere. And so the thing that I like to ask my employees at Siemens is, if you could live anywhere, where would you like to be? So I think mayors like you have a different kind of math to do, which is, what kind of lifestyle are we going to offer residents? Are you thinking about it this way? Or would you say that the development strategy is still very business focused and bringing whole workforces?
Oh, without a doubt, the choice of where people work is a twofold decision, where the company allows them to work and then where they want to work. The pandemic has really opened up a new world to people's work experience. People can work from home. They can work from satellite work offices. They, you know, you have a laptop, will work. You can go anywhere and work. And it's really about where you can have a good work-life balance. And that is what we're advertising Atlanta as. Money Magazine said Atlanta was the best city to live last year. Bloomberg says Atlanta has more going for it than any other city. This is the best place to start your career. That's what they said for millennials. So we feel very comfortable that we have a great value proposition on living. We have the world's busiest airport, so you can get anywhere in the world from Atlanta with a short flight, and you can get there without connections in a lot of, you can go there direct. We have so many parks and green space and festivals and the ability to get additional education in college or grad school. It's just great people here too, great food, great culture. So we're selling that as part of this ecosystem is, this is the place that you want to live. So if companies don't move their whole headquarters here or have a secondary headquarters here, or if the company says you can live where you want to live, we know based on how many people come here every Friday and never leave, that people are choosing Atlanta to be a place that they can live they can find a place to raise a family here.
We know that, too. I'll tell you, in and around Atlanta, we have almost 2,000 employees. It's been a great place to start up businesses. We have some of our best innovation centers there. And actually, what we've chosen to do, you mentioned the Atlanta University Center and the fantastic institutions right there in town. We've been doing everything we can to reach out and reach into a segment of people who maybe have never known that they could join an engineering company like Siemens and get them engaged. And we've been giving grants to small Black-owned businesses to help them compete for Siemens contracts. These are all business imperatives where what we're trying to reach is the talent that is everywhere in our society. I'd love to hear your priorities for ensuring that your tech ambitions for Atlanta benefit all residents and businesses. I'd love your feedback about what the business community can be doing better.
Yeah, well, first, thank you for having 2,000 employees here in the city of Atlanta. And thank you for reaching to these young people in colleges like the HBCUs and working with small businesses so that supplier diversity is big. There's huge contracts that you get and being able to work with small, local, minority-owned businesses, Black-owned businesses to be able to help their ability to get into these projects. You know, these are talented individuals that just need a shot. And not even a hand out, but a hand up. And so I think that that's great that you guys are doing that. We have to just do more of it. It doesn't happen naturally. It happens by intentionality, unfortunately. But fortunately, there are some intentional moments that you just mentioned. You have to say, this is a part of our goal. This is what we set our vision to be, is that we want to grow equitably. We want to grow with diverse populations. We want to be inclusive. We want to do so in a way that we don't sacrifice profitability by being diverse. As a matter of fact, diversity is good for business. And so for us, we're investing in small businesses. We created the Atlanta Startup Growth Fund. We have $1 million that companies can have access to. And that was at a time when, you know, VCs and others were pulling back and the interest rates were going up really high. So we start putting, $1 million out there so small businesses could get anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 or $150,000 to be able to continue their business operations or buy meaningful equipment or other things that they needed. We also have a substantial amount of events and workshops to be able to help these small businesses learn, some skills that they may be missing, whether that's in marketing, whether that's human resources, whether that's in their back offices, in their payroll management, real estate. I mean, just a number of things. And then the other thing is we help them find customers. We want the city of Atlanta to be a customer. And the city of Atlanta, Metro Atlanta, has the highest concentration of Fortune 500 companies. So we have a lot of potential customers for small businesses and startups. So we try to make sure that our business community sees our small business community as vendors. So how do you become a vendor? How do you make sure that you are giving opportunities to these businesses? And how does the city do so? We brought on a number of small businesses to be suppliers to the city. We have a contract compliance program that requires it for minority hiring and minority participation. So it's important for us up and down the ladder, whether it's in technology or whether it's in paving roads or whether it's in operating the world's busiest airport. We want to make sure that we have diverse perspectives at the table because it makes for a better community and better outcome.
I think we're going to need everybody at the table. And there's one more thing I want to ask you, Mayor Dickens, before we close with my final question. We've been working with customers to fully maximize the benefits of the bipartisan infrastructure law. And I know that you recently met with President Biden at the White House. So talk about how the law is helping to build a new airport terminal at Hartsfield-Jackson. Is leveraging this law and maybe CHIPS and the Inflation Reduction Act, is that part of your strategy for bolstering Atlanta's tech presence?
Absolutely. It is so important to leverage every relationship that we have, every grant opportunity, every law. So the CHIPS Act, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, the Biden-Harris team, I've been working with them and trying to make sure that at every time they say we have money to offer, I say, hey, Atlanta has a plan. You know, I'm out there shaking the trees for any dollars that we can get to our city, and also sharing that knowledge with other cities, other mayors, other county leaders. For us, the bipartisan infrastructure law was a huge success. It helped us pave more roads. It helped us build and support more parks and recreation centers, more fire stations, et cetera, to help those things. But it also helps us be a city that has more jobs, more connectivity, more opportunity for our small businesses. And in each of those developments, you have technology that's at play. So when we get a big contract or a big grant, that means we can complete that terminal, which also has individuals that will get hired and small businesses that are in technology spaces that we will then hire to do certain parts of that development. So all along that plan, it matters. And so with the CHIPS Act specifically, we're working directly with Georgia Tech, you know, my alma mater, to be able to work with Georgia Tech on some things that they're trying to do that they've been successful at with localized chip making and all the fabrications and all of the new innovative solutions, to be able to say, how do we do that locally, make it locally, and have a full local ecosystem of customers, jobs, and technology investment. And we're doing that. We're talking to the Biden and Harris administration about how Atlanta can be a big player in that, using Georgia Tech, City of Atlanta, and other willing partners.
The concept of hubs is a powerful one. Mayor, it's been so great to have you on the show. And I like to end every episode by turning the floor over to my guests to provide an optimistic vision for the future. You've provided an aspiring vision of what becoming a top five technology hub could mean to Atlanta. And here you are in this leadership role with the U.S. Conference of Mayors. If other cities were to follow suit, how will this positively benefit our nation's future?
Yeah, our world is constantly changing, and we are constantly evolving. And we have to meet those challenges with technology, with innovation, with engineering, with optimism. Mm-hmm. We can't see challenges and say, well, that's it. There's no solution for this, or, you know, they got us, or anything like that. No, we have to approach these things head on, and we have to work together. We have to use science. We have to use our communication skills. We have to use our community building skills and do all these things so that we can build trust, so that we can deliver excellence and opportunity to others, including our youth. Someone's watching us. Someone is wanting to be just like us one day. And so we have to give them opportunities. So that means internships, that means mentorship. All of that is necessary so that, you know, 10 years from now, 15, 20 years from now, some other people are going to be leading these corporations or leading these great projects. They're going to be coming up with ideas that's going to make us better as a society. So for me, my optimism is great companies that are making sure that they serve their stakeholders and shareholders to make profits, but also are good community partners that are able to go out here and support the community initiatives to help build a better country. Moving Atlanta forward is my goal. So working together, as I mentioned, public-private partnerships and utilizing innovation and technology to move us forward is the key. And so I thank you for this opportunity to be on your show, continue to do all that you are doing, and good luck to all of you all at Siemens.
Mayor Dickens, thank you. What a privilege.
Thank you.
It was great to have Mayor Dickens on the podcast. As you know, I'm reminded of what I say to my team at Siemens all the time, that technology is only as powerful as the people behind it. At Siemens, our success as a technology company requires significant investment, not just in R&D, but in people. It requires us to collaborate with educators at all levels, to provide training and lifelong learning opportunities for people at all stages of their careers. And you heard from Mayor Dickens, that's what it takes to be a tech city too, to prepare and inspire people to get engaged and participate, to break down barriers to access, to provide opportunities to learn and undergo training. Business and government, educators and nonprofits, we're all in this together. We're part of an ecosystem cultivating the workforce and cities we need today and in the future. And I know that increasing America's technology leadership can not only result in more patents, more inventions, and more answers to some of our toughest challenges, it can also generate great careers for people of all backgrounds. Thanks for listening. And as always, please go to the show notes to learn more. Please follow us on social media and on your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you for tuning in.